together to study your word, Lord. Just open our hearts, open our minds, put the earlier part of the day, the rest of the day behind us, so that we can concentrate on what you have for us. Thank you for gathering us together. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.
Amen.
Proverbs, remember, is a father's advice to a son through the various stages of the son's life. And in the later chapters, we get a grown-up son talking to his father or to his mentor or to his peers. In this case, at chapter 25, these also are proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. So this is added in later to the main dialogue that Solomon wrote. And it supplements the early fathers venerated the Proverbs, and they came collected together and added on of these closing chapters. These also are the Proverbs of Solomon. Now, this is pretty neat stuff. It is the glory of God to conceal a matter. The glory of kings is to search out a matter. We have so many cover-ups in our society, so many devious, sinister plots, and we always hide the evidence, and the perpetrators hide the evidence. It's the glory of king to go search this all out, so to investigate, to research, to sort truth from error.
This is God himself, though, that has...
It's God himself in this. I think you'll see in a minute that the reference is here to the king who's responsible for all this, and the king is ultimately Jesus. As the heavens for height and the earth for depth, so the heart of kings is unsearchable. If you have authority and integrity, nobody can put you down and nobody can refute you. That's the mark of a king, ultimate authority. Jesus is the only rightful king in the world. We have kings, most of them are crooks or jerks or deceived. As the heavens for height and the earth for depth, so the heart of kings is unsearchable. So you can go to the king like Solomon, and you can pose your hard questions. As remember, Solomon was, two prostitutes came to Solomon with a baby, and they argued that they wanted Solomon to figure out who was the right mother, and Solomon said, well, give me the baby and bring a sword and let's cut the baby in half, and I'll give each of you women half of the baby. And the rightful mother, the birth mother of this child, spoke up to Solomon and said, oh, no, no, Lord, give it to that other woman over there, that's the real mother. Well, the real mother she was so self-giving, she wanted that woman to have her own baby. And Solomon said, okay, give the baby to the real mother. And that's pretty crafty. Well, that's a king. Take away the dross from the silver, and it will go to the silversmith for jewelry. Dross is unwanted metal in a melt of gold and silver, or in this case, silver. If you are a craftsman and you want to make hammer out a nice silver bowl or pitcher or whatever, you have to have pure silver. You can't have contaminants like copper or iron. Otherwise, the tin won't melt. If you've ever seen tin, it's soft and pliable. So he says, now, he's talking here not about a literal silver vessel. He's talking about people. He's talking about, because silver stands for redemption and gold for deity. So our lives need to be refined and heated up to burn out all the dross metals. Then we can be fashioned into something useful. This is in the New Testament. In Great House, there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but of woodenware and stone. And, this is my footpad here because I kicked them and it gets on the recording. Take away the wicked from before the king and his throne will be established in righteousness. That's pretty interesting that a king, if he has antagonists like Donald Trump, people that put him down and hate him and argue with him, it lowers his effectiveness as a king. Those evil, wicked men should be prayed out of there, so the king has the authority God has given him to rule. Now, the king is not perfect. He's got problems. but his throne will be established in righteousness. If the guy is has integrity, if he knows Jesus, he's going to be established. Do not exalt yourself in the presence of the king. Do not stand in the place of great men. It is better that the king say to you, come up here, than that you should be put lower in the presence of the prince, whom your eyes have seen. So this is a royal court scene here, in which the king is wise and godly and smart, and ultimately Jesus. And it's not a good idea to go in front of a king who's all-knowing and proclaim that you're somebody really great, and that the king needs you, and you've got a solution to his struggles, and cozy up to you. That's not cool. Rather, you should say, Your Majesty or Sir, how may I serve you? What do you want me to do? That's the proper respect that we have for real authority. Okay? Do not hastily go to court. What will you do in the end when your neighbor has put you to shame? This is very good about taking somebody to court and suing the heck out of him. And finding out that your charges were, you were deceived, or the truth came out. Debate your case with your neighbor himself, and do not disclose the secret to another, lest he who hears it, God, expose your shame and your reputation is ruined. When you accuse somebody without adequate evidence, when you take him to court, when you dispute his integrity, be careful. If you're wrong, you're in big trouble. And God's going to find you out, and you're going to be humiliated. See that? Your reputation, you'll have a reputation of being a loudmouth bragger, and nobody will give you any credibility. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. Like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise reprover to an obedient heart. A reprover is somebody who quietly exposes the truth about a matter because he's got the authority to do so. And this is adds beauty and integrity to the king's credibility in the society. Like the cold of snow in time of harvest, he is a faithful messenger to those who send him, for he refreshes the soul for his masters. Like the cold of snow in time of harvest, is a faithful messenger to those who send him, he refreshes the soul for his masters.
My footnote in Revelations, when it says, I'd rather you were hot or cold, says this is the kind of cold that it's referring to.
Yeah, because you're neither hot nor cold, I'll vomit you out of my mouth. Laodicea. Whoever falsely boasts of giving is like clouds and wind without rain. This would be the person that says, oh, I give generously to the Red Cross, or I tithe 20% to my church. I'm very generous by nature, and the guy is lying. He also wants people to acknowledge that he's the most generous man they've ever met. See that hypocrisy. By long forbearance, a ruler is persuaded. A gentle tongue breaks a bone. In other words, if you want to win a battle against an opponent, you do it with gentleness and kindness, not with meeting him on his own terms. These proverbs are humorous in a way, because they cut right to the heart of the real world. Have you found honey? Eat only as much as you need, lest you be filled with it and vomit. That reminds us of Samson, remember, who found a honeycomb in the carcass of a dead lion, and he ate of it and lost his power temporarily. Because now honey is a very wonderful form of sugar if you have a teaspoon of it. It's absolutely great. You can put it on your toast, but you don't want to take a glass of honey and drink it. That's obviously makes you sick to your stomach if you have too much, because it's so rich. Lawrence can tell us about that. All right. So this is funny. Seldom set foot in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. If you're a nuisance, if you crash on somebody's pad all the time, if you take advantage of his hospitality, you're going to wear your welcome thin, and you're not going to be welcome, and he's going to be too polite to tell you that. But taking advantage of other people, taking advantage of Howard and his kindness, and disobeying the rules of the house and is not cool. A man who bears false witness against his neighbor is like a club, a sword, and a sharp arrow. You only get somebody angry at you if you attack him with clubs and swords and a sharp arrow. That's not the way to win a battle. That's not the way to make friends. Not the way to win an enemy over. See that? All of these things could be amplified if you take the time. Confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a bad tooth and a foot out of joint. He's talking about an unfaithful man. That's somebody that's wishy-washy in his relationship with Jesus. Somebody who's unpredictable and off the wall. That kind of a person. Don't trust that kind of person who's unstable. Double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. We saw that in James when we studied James. A bad tooth. Like a bad tooth. Tooth decay and a toothache. And how about a foot out of joint? Well, that's pretty neat. There's a lot of really deep insight in Proverbs to real life. Solomon is the wisest man in the ancient world.
And also to the New Testament as well. I see a lot of parallel here.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. You know, let your yeses be yeses and your noes be noes is kind of the thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
For this one.
Absolutely right. Like one who takes away a garment in cold weather, and like vinegar on soda is one who sings songs to a heavy heart. You don't take somebody's garment when they're freezing cold. You don't mix vinegar and soda because the acid and the base foam up, if you've ever tried that. So you don't sing songs to a heavy heart. Sometimes you want to cheer somebody up and you only make it worse. That's not always the case, but here, in this case, you go over to try to soothe somebody and you're not relevant to what they're actually going through. So you haven't really brought any comfort. If your enemy is hungry, go give him bread to eat. If he's thirsty, give him water to eat. For so you will heap coals of fire on his head, and the Lord will reward you. That expression, heaping coals on your head, is from Romans, quoted in Romans 12. And it's kind of an obscure passage. Most Bible commentators think that this refers to the custom in the ancient world of everybody having coals in their fireplace. The last thing you want is to have those coals burn and die out. It might be that if your fire is out and you call your next door neighbor and he brings a pot of hot coals over from his fireplace and gives you some. So that would be, I don't know how true that is. That's what I think Ray Stedman taught me 1,000 years ago. The north wind brings forth rain, a backbiting tongue and angry countenance. Backbiter is somebody that talks behind your back, that puts you down, that's judgmental and critical. The north wind brings forth rain. A backbiting tongue brings an angry countenance. People who see through you are going to get very annoyed. As cold water to a weary soul, so is good news from a far country. That's pretty good. Sometimes we get the most encouragement from somebody that lives remote from our area. We're going through turbulence or conflict here, and a friend writes you a letter or calls you up from Florida or from London or someplace or other, and they are living in a different world. They cheer you right up. See that? Cold water to a weary soul on a hot day. A righteous man who falters before the wicked is like a murky spring and a polluted well. Now, the righteous man is somebody who's trusting in Jesus in a consistent way. That's what righteousness is, imputed righteousness. And there's no reason for you to cave in when you're around a person who is lacks integrity. There's no reason for you to buckle in and accommodate the guy. Stand your ground. That's the idea here. And if you don't stand your way, you buckle and cave in to somebody that's definitely screwed up or acting inappropriately. That's the same thing as a spring that's bringing up muddy water or a polluted well. And James talks about that. Remember, the tongue is a small member and boasts of great things. The tongue can either be an instrument of great healing and speech, but this tongue can be deadly and full of restless evil. And so we always have to keep in mind these two springs, one good and one evil in all of us. It's not good to eat much honey. So to seek one's own glory is not glory. Isn't that nice? Don't be syrupy sweet. Don't be a man pleaser. And see that? I do. I see that. Whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. If you can't control yourself, and self-control is fruit of the Spirit, it's not something you do. But if you have no self-control, you're just like a city whose walls have been torn down and rubble, and the enemy can come right in unstopped. See that? Well, that's why this is a personal level. This is not a literal city. People should not railroad us. If you're right with God, you don't have to buckle to anybody. You have authority, and because God's your authority.
Is this like possess himself with all diligence, or what does it mean to control your own spirit?
That's right. If you can't control your own spirit, you're in big trouble. As snow in the summer and rain in harvest, so honor is not fitting a fool. You do not take a fool and elevate him in prominence and give him credibility and help build his empire. Most preachers today are building themselves up and putting down people they don't like. And it is not a good idea to honor a guy that's all screwed up, a Darwinist or a gay advocate or whatever. And that's what we do. We give them glory and prominence by attacking them, and that only gives them popularity and favor. Like a flitting sparrow, like a flying swallow, so a curse without cause shall not alight. Sparrows, if you see sparrows, they fly around and they're constantly restless. And a flitting sparrow is flitting in and out of his nest. A flying sparrow, unpredictable. And that's what happens to a curse which has no root cause. In other words, you curse somebody, you put them down, and you're totally judging them in a false way. So that's why, judge not that you be not judged. With the judgment you dish out at other people, you yourself will be judged. So it'll only come back to haunt you. And we do not know the heart of other men. We don't know their motives. We cannot play God in that person's life. We have to be a bit more tactful.
Lawrence, did you want to contribute something there on rule over his own spirit?
The Bible's full of images of looking to your own self, judging yourself lest you be judged. Possessing yourself in all patience and humility, but I don't think there's like in the church that there's many sermons on this, or that there's very much wisdom or teaching about how to actually do it, or that we actually will look at a brother and say, wait, he's not possessing himself or ruling over his own spirit. It's not like it's not like a thing that we like measure ourselves or others by.
Yeah.
But maybe it ought to be, you know, in a sense. Like, it's like when I think of Dave Bang, I think of a person who possesses his own soul and rules over his spirit really well.
A whip for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, and a rod for a fool's back. If a guy is a fool, an utter unstable fool, then you probably should discipline him. And just like you would train a horse that's a wild stallion that has got to be tamed, or the donkey. Donkeys are very, very stubborn. I rode one in Egypt, and they are wonderful little beasts of burden. But boy, are they sometimes stubborn. Well, what do you do? You've got to shape that donkey up or that tame that horse. So that's compared to a rod shaping up a wayward, rebellious kid. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him. You don't have to deal with the guy that's obviously off the wall and coming from left field, doesn't know what he's talking about. If you give him credibility if you promote him, give him a time on the platform. You don't have to do that, okay? Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. So you can refute error by teaching the truth. You don't have to do anything but teach the truth. You don't have to answer the arguments of people that don't know God. He who sends a message by the hand of a fool cuts off his own feet and drinks violence. In other words, you don't use this foolish guy as your message bearer. He's not credible. He's unpredictable. He's foolish. He who sends a message by the hand of his fool cuts off his own feet and drinks violence. Pretty strong. Like the legs of the lame that hang limp is a proverb in the mouth of fools. The kind of person who has no substance, no credibility, and runs around giving you words of wisdom. Well, you know they're not wise at all. So you can just sit there and let him rant, and you don't have to take him seriously. He wants your endorsement and your credibility, and you don't give it to him. Like one who binds a stone in a sling is he who gives honor to a fool. That's a slingshot. You should not add to the credibility of a guy out there that's all messed up, a false teacher, a cultist.
Well, it's kind of like the image there is like David, if he like had this sling, he puts a stone in it, and he's like twirling it to kill Goliath, but he actually tied the stone into the sling so that it wouldn't go forward. Like, so the person who gives this honor is like a person who is like literally in a way binding his stone inside of his sling.
That's a good way. It's going to bounce back on you. Yeah, that's a good idea. Like a thorn that goes into the hand of a drunkard is a proverb in the mouth of fools. If you're dead drunk, somebody can injure you like with a thorn and you don't notice it. And you can bleed or have a lot of damage, but if you're drunk, you're anesthetized. The great God who formed all things gives the fool his hire, his transgressors his wages. Wow. The great God who formed all things. God has created everybody. He's in charge of the bad guys and the good guys, everything in between, because we live in an orderly universe. So we can count on God making wise moves and decisions and managing evil people and blessing his own children. That's a really incredible thing for God, for Jesus. 7.7 billion people in the world, and Jesus personally manages every single one. And he's able to be intimate with everyone who knows him. And so we are protected species because we know Jesus. All the people out there that don't know Jesus will answer to him. That's clear. As a dog returns to his own vomit, so a fool repeats his folly. If you've ever seen a dog and they get sick to their stomach and vomit it up, ordinarily the dog will turn right around and eat his own vomit. That's just dogs. That's why dogs in the Middle East are unclean animals, because they eat their own vomit. And so the fool here is eating his own vomit. He doesn't have any fresh food at all. He doesn't know any better. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than for him. hubris. The slothful man, lazy man, says, there's a lion in the road, a fierce lion in the streets. I can't go out and get a job. There's dangers out there. There's crooks and criminals, and it's a lawless society. So I'm just going to sit here and watch TV. I'm not going to go out there and risk going out of that world. What? Me go get a job? No, Howard has that thing to deal with all the time. The brother's house.
Don't even mention it.
As a door turns on its hinges, so does the lazy man turn on his bed. You've seen people, you can't get them out of bed. They're lazy. And sometimes a parent has to kick the kid out of bed, roll him out on his floor, and gets angry and upset. Hey, listen, I told you to go mow the lawn. Why are you sleeping in? It's noon. See that picture? He who passes by and meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a dog by the ears. If you hurt a dog by tugging at his ear, he'd probably turn around and bite you. He's probably going to get very upset. He's not going to get the meaning of what you intended. So that's the dog. Don't meddle in a quarrel. If you're a third party and a quarrel is going on, don't interfere and meddle and try to solve it. You will probably not win. You can pray about it, but like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I was only joking. That's not very cool to inflame a controversy, to fan an argument by taking one side or another, or even getting yourself involved. If there's a quarrel going on between two people, stay out of it and be ready to help both parties when the fire's out. And then don't come back and say, hey, I was only kidding. I didn't mean what I said. Will you guys forgive me? I should have minded my own business. That's not going to work. Where there's no wood, a fire goes out. Where there is no talebearer, strife ceases. Wow. Where there is nobody to tattle, to gossip, to add fuel to the fire, when that's not there, the strife will cease. That's just incredible. As charcoal is to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. Charcoal is to burning coals and wood to fire. The processes of combustion that take charcoal and reduce it to a hot coal or wood to ashes. A contentious man is one that argues and picks fights and wants to put the other guy down. Contentiousness is a very dangerous thing.
This is the tongue sets things ablaze in James.
Yeah. Fervent lips with a wicked heart are like earthenware covered with silver dross. Look at the humor in this. You got a bad heart and you got wrong motives and you sweet talk somebody.
We skip 22.
Verse 23. Fervent lips with a wicked heart. That would mean passionate pleas, reasoned arguments, being quiet and well-mannered, but having a totally wrong motives. It's like having a clay pot that has a silver coating on it that's fake. It's not silver. It's got a silver plating on it. So it looks good on the surface. He who hates disguises it with his lips, lays up deceit within himself. Hatred is a form of murder. He who hates his brother is a murderer. You know that no murderer has eternal life dwelling in him. When he speaks kindly, don't believe him. There are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness will be revealed before the congregation. Uh-oh. Truth's going to come out in the long run, and this guy is treacherous. Bad news. False teacher. He's deceiving you. The world is so full of deceit today. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it. You set a trap for yourself, you fall into your own pit. He who rolls a stone will have to roll it back again. This reminds me of Sisyphus in the Greek legends, who was cursed. He had to roll this big heavy rock up to the top of the hill every day, and he'd get it up to the top of the hill, and then it would come rolling. It would push him back down. He had to start all over again. And that was his eternal destiny. So I remember Sisyphus.
Sounds like me.
No, you never get to your goal. You never get any relief. Probably a picture of hell.
Isn't that the curse that on Adam, that man will never complete what he wants to complete?
He'll toil all the days of his life, and he'll bring forth by the sweat of his brow. Yeah, pretty much he'll never really have what he wants without continuous labor.
Yeah.
A lot of men are hitched to the wagon of provision for, you know, themselves and other people, and they just literally pull that wagon day in and day out every day.
Yeah. You know, never climb out of the hole. That's right. He who hates disguises it with his lips and lays up deceit within himself. You can hate another person and sweet talk to them and pretend to be their friend, and that's totally malicious. And God sees right through that. And you're deceiving yourself, and you're trying to deceive your friend. When he speaks kindly, don't believe him, the guy who's treacherous. There are seven abominations in his heart. Wow. This guy is just a little bit bad. He's seven times bad. If you wanted to analyze him, which will happen at the end of his life when he dies, stands before judgment. His wickedness will be revealed before the whole congregation. In other words, the secrets of who he really is are going to be made public. And nothing's going to be hidden. And everybody's going to have to say, oh, Lord, you were right all along. I don't deserve to go to your heaven. Or they run away in shame. They hide. And there's no place to hide except in hell. And that's a place that God reluctantly consigns people. He can't save you against your will. He can't violate your free choice. And although he wants to save everybody, most people say, no, I want to do my own thing. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it. He who rolls a stone will have to roll it back again. That's a repeat. A lying tongue hates those who are crushed by it. A flattering tongue works ruin. Do not boast about tomorrow. You do not know what a day may bring forth. Wow. One day at a time. You cannot go back to the past and undo things. You can't jump ahead to tomorrow and plan things. All you've got today to live is today. That's all you have. We're trapped in time. We're trapped in linear time. The only way we see things is past to present to future, one move at a time. This is a result of the fall. As Christians, we have eternal life now. And that means that we have a new dimension of time fullness in which we can already begin to taste of heaven and the multidimensional time nature of heaven, and the quality of life is going to be redeemed. In the last few months, I have seen, to my utter amazement, that with the Lord, one day is like 1,000 years, 1,000 years like day. I can look back on a day, and I can't remember when it started, because the quality of things jammed in is so high. And then I have situations in which I'm utterly bored, in which time grinds to a halt, and I have to endure something that I just like out of it, and then clock starts running again. So there are a lot of dimensions to time. And Chuck Messer was good in teaching about the multidimensional nature of time and space, that the present physical world is embedded in a multidimensional universe, and that universe surrounds us right now, and so we're prisoners right now. And you can't choose to be born to other parents. You can't choose to live in a different time of history. You can't go back and fix the past. But you can live a high-quality life right now, which is giving Jesus permission to live in and through you. So I don't remember where I stopped ranting here. Let another man praise you, and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips. Don't toot your own horn. Don't promote your how great you are. What a great person, great speaker, great. That is not cool. Let other people say good things about you, and don't give them too much credibility, or you might believe what they say when they say nice things. But don't promote yourself. Don't seek to be in the limelight. Don't try to, because any good thing comes out of your life is not your doing, it's Jesus. And so he gets the credit, you don't. So remember that the universe belongs to Jesus. It was created for him. When he died on the cross, he bought it back, bought everybody back, in order that he could build a kingdom. And he's now in charge of the coming kingdom. And he wants men and women and boys and girls to serve him willingly and gladly. He doesn't force himself on us.
Well, all of Proverbs 26 is about not promoting a fool. And so you better not promote yourself.
That's right. That's good.
Because you know your own stuff better than anybody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wrath is cruel and anger a torment. Who is able to stand before jealousy? You're jealous of somebody else. They make more money than you do. They're smarter. They're better educated than you are. Don't pay any attention to that nonsense. God loves you for who you are, and he's going to make the story of your life have a very happy ending. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, and the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. That's tough. We sometimes have to confront our friends, our brothers and sisters, by getting their attention, and they probably don't want to hear what you have to say. But if you speak the truth in love, and you're kind, and you, like a good parent correcting a kid, you will change that person's behavior. You can't order them to change their behavior, but you can call them aside and say, "Hey, Joe, let me call your attention to something I've noticed about you over the last 10 years. You are pretty harsh. Well, the issue I'm dealing with right now is Lambert's runs ahead of God all the time," which is true. And I didn't know that until somebody pointed it out to me. I didn't know it. A stone is heavy and sand is weighty. A fool's wrath is heavier than both of them. See the analogies here. A heavy stone that you can hardly lift. A bag of sand. It's a chore to haul a bag of sand around or lift this stone. A fool's wrath is heavier than others. When somebody gets angry and they're not a fool and they don't know what, it's very annoying. It kind of stops everybody. Somebody is getting our attention, and it's not something you want to put up with. Open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. Speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into Christ, who is the head of all rule and authority. New Testament. Speaking the truth in love is what builds up your brothers and your sisters. Speaking the truth that we have from Jesus enlightens everybody that hears it. That's it's just absolutely amazing.
This is almost saying we should invite people to be ruthless with us.
We should. Because other people know you better than you know yourself. I don't like that. I would rather think that my self-image is accurate and correct and you guys are all screwed up. But that's not true. And you've got better radars than I have. And so who I am, it should be plain and open. And if you guys don't come and tell me, I'll never change. And then I'll be very difficult to live with in heaven. I won't. Okay? Ranting. Better is open rebuke than love carefully concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. The kisses of an enemy are deceitful. A satisfied soul loathes the honeycomb. In other words, if you're satisfied and content, great gain in godliness with contentment, You don't need a lot of sugary sweet honey. You don't need a lot of expensive meals out on the town. You don't need a plush house to live in because you're fulfilled in your faith. It doesn't matter. You're content.
Well, I think this verse 7, 2, there's a connotation in here where Jesus said, woe to you who are full, for you shall be made hungry. Blessed are you who hunger and thirst, especially after righteousness, for you shall be made full. There's an idea that people that are going to the world and getting their appetites and their needs filled, they can say, oh, I don't have any lust, but they just, because they looked at porn all week or whatever, I'm very, very cool or whatever. Whereas a person who's red hot for God is always going to be sort of very needy in their being, unsatiated, unsatisfied. But then Jesus is going to come. He's going to make this the simplest thing be a contentment to them, that to somebody else they would go, oh, I don't want this beautiful girl. I've had so many beautiful girls. None of them please me or something.
Yeah. That's right. That's good. Thank you. Like a bird that wanders from its nest is a man who wanders from his place in life. Birds are very contented with the nest. That's where they lay eggs and raise their young. And the bird is at home in his nest. So a man who wanders around homeless has no nest, has no place to come home to. We all need a sanctuary that's our own, whether it's single or married, whether you have a wife and kids. When you get home, you drop the cares of the world, you enjoy your family, you have peace and tranquility. That's assuming that you know how to get along with your wife. Which we find out today.
Some men are naturally driven to roam, and this is what it means to walk in the night instead of, you know, rest in the night.
Oh, that's so good.
Just like a bird would never, like, leave its nest and wander to another, you know, what it's saying.
Yeah, birds don't go nest in somebody else's nest. But they know right, you know, my hummingbirds here know exactly where to go. At 40 miles an hour, they go to their nest, the little tiny birds, and they don't get lost.
Their nest is the size of a half of a golf ball. It's so cute.
They're beautiful.
Their eggs are like jelly beans.
Yeah. Ointment and perfume delight the heart. The sweetness of a man's friend does so by hearty counsel. Sweet, sweet, kind, edifying words are like a fragrant perfume. Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend, nor go to a brother's house in the day of your calamity, for better is a neighbor nearby than a brother far away. The people who know you best and live where you live are the best resource when you're going through trouble. Don't go halfway across the country and call your uncle in Kansas or your stepfather in Kansas and expect that he's going to give you good advice. He doesn't know your circumstances. He's probably going to try hard, but your best friends are the people right around you in your life. So you don't go running to your faraway brother when you're having a stressful time. Go to your friends that know you. My son, be wise. Now here's personal life. My son, Solomon says, be wise and make my heart glad that I may answer him who reproaches me. If you want somebody to defend your reputation and you've been accused, your friends are there for you. They're loyal. They are going to honestly assess what you're saying, listen to you, pray about it, and say, no, that's wrong. Or, yeah, he blew it, but he's repentant.
This proverb is about the children, and by your fruits you shall be known. And this is like when a person has a wise child, it is like a vindication of their life. And Jesus said, wisdom is justified by her own children, when he was accused of being not wise. And so the idea here is it's even in the eldership requirements that they be the father of ruly children instead of unruly.
Yeah.
And it's in Proverbs 27 where it says, they shall not be ashamed at the gates, you know,
who
have the blessing of their children. And so somehow this sense that you don't automatically get good children, unless you've done a lot of work. But then when someone sees your children, they can't really criticize you. Just like Jesus couldn't be criticized.
Yeah.
Because the outcome of his deeds bore good fruit.
That's right.
So the children of a thing are the thing that justifies it, that shows the wisdom of it. In the time, it might seem foolish, or the person might seem foolish, but you have to look at the outcome of it and the fruit that it bears. Yeah.
My son, be wise and make my heart glad, that I may answer him who reproaches me. A prudent man foresees evil and hides himself. The simple pass on and are punished. Take the garment of him who is surety for a stranger. Hold it in pledge. When he is a surety for a seductress. Now, I won't take time to amplify that, but that's a gem. He who blesses his friend with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, it will be counted as a curse to him. Mm-hmm. Don't call attention to your brother and friend in the public square when open him up to ridicule and scorn. Don't praise somebody excessively. Let God do that. See the taking a good man who's quiet and exposing him to public ridicule, not good. Doesn't help any. Especially when Christians are a very small minority. A continual dripping on a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. Whoever restrains her restrains the wind and grasps oil in his right hand. We've seen this woman before. This is the seductive prostitute in chapters up earlier. The bad news, the Jezebel, the Athaliah, who is actually a killer and a destroyer, really. And she makes a bitchy, nasty wife. She's going to criticize you when you get home from the office tired. She's going to nag you and belittle you and tear you down. And you're never going to get free from her contentiousness.
The flip side of that is she starts out little and cute when you marry her, and usually your own negligence turns her into that.
Yeah, yeah. And some of the things she says about you are true. But you only make it more difficult to change because you should have unconditional love and support from your wife.
Yes.
It takes three to tango.
We will see that.
As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens his friend, his countenance. This is a great verse. Iron sharpens iron, one man sharpens another. Man, that's so good. By hanging out with each other and spending time with each other, God as the third party always is going to improve both of us. We all have strengths and weaknesses, and I can come to respect your gifts and your calling and think, gosh, I'm just one among many brothers. And God's doing a great work in all of us. Whoever keeps the fig tree will eat its fruit. So he who waits on his master will be honored. If you're a gardener and you're taking care of an orchard, you take care of your trees. And in due season, you're going to have ripe figs. So also, if you serve Jesus faithfully with your life, he will honor you. It can't be hidden. As in water, face reveals face, a man's heart reveals the man. This is a picture of looking into a pool of water and seeing your own face bounce back. It used to get that. So the light, the world around you is going to reflect back to you a mirror image of the reality of who you are. And he who looks into the perfect law of liberty, James talks about that, sees clearly. So truth will out, because who you really are is going to come out one way or another in the long run. And if you learn from that, and you have been justified by your faith in Jesus. So hi, Stephen.
Hey, how's it going?
That's very good, by the way, what you said. That was very good.
As in water, face reveals face. You get a mirror image back from the mirror, except it's reversed. And a man's heart reveals the man. The heart of man is deceitful above all things, desperately corrupt. Who is able to understand it? Well, Jesus is able to understand it. And he loves you, accepts you, and he's going to get you through. And you're going to have a perfect track record when he gets done with you, in spite of yourself. Hell and destruction are never full. The eyes of man are never satisfied. Isn't that good? That's about lust. It's about the desire of our eyes. It's about movies and television and pornography and the lust to the eyes.
Is this part of why we're not supposed to make graven images? Or
yeah, except that we don't have stone idols in our culture, but we're more idolatrous than any pagan people in the world. Our idolatries are in our sensuality, our love of pleasure, because the deception of the world is deadly. It might be better to be blind sometimes. That's what Jesus said. If your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. He doesn't say what to do with the other eye. You should pluck that out too. Because your eye...
It's been duly warned, so it's not going to... It's not going to...
It's not going to go to... It's got one eye that knows it's pointing in the same direction. Two eyes may go. Anyway. Look at the humor in here. The refining pot is for silver, the furnace for gold. A man is valued by what others say of him. Wow. At the end of your life, are you going to get a good review, or are you going to get a bad review? Are you going to get a few pluses and mostly minuses? See, we are in a refining process right now. God sifts and sorts and tests every one of us to get all the dross out. That's the refining pot. This is to take a pot of ore and melt it. It takes a great deal of heat and energy. And you heat it up until you burn off all the base metals. And they vaporize and boil away. And then you've got this pot of molten metal. When you take gold out of the mine, it's got to be refined to 99% pure. That takes retorts with enormous furnaces firing them. Well, it's okay. To think of yourself as being poured into, being refined, is a very vivid picture, because God has to refine us. He has to refine us to get all the base metal out. And boy, that is not comfortable. Though you grind a fool in a mortar with a pestle along with crushed grain, yet his foolishness will not depart from it. Now the picture here is taking some wheat or some barley or some corn and putting them in a mortar and pestle and reducing them to flour. This is what flour mills do. It's what windmills do, is they grind. And you have to grind either a mortar and pestle or two blocks of stone, where you take that grain and it ends up flour. Now, the analogy here, you can take a foolish man and grind him into pieces, and he's not going to get rid of his foolishness. He's foolish to the core. What a vivid picture.
The image of Jesus saying, Peter, oh Peter, Satan has demanded to thresh you like wheat, and I have prayed that you'll endure. Even Peter, the rock, is, not necessarily going to come through. Jesus has to be praying for him and warning him.
Yeah.
But there's a threshing floor that's out there for our grain, and we are literally going to be ground to powder in a way by life.
That's right. Or we ought to be, because that gets all the, turns that grain into useful products. Flour is good for making bread, but raw wheat doesn't make very good bread. Let's just ground. Be diligent to know the state of your flocks. Attend to your herds. Riches are not forever, nor does the crown endure to all generations. We have a flock of people in our lives that we are responsible for. They ought to be well-behaved sheep or goats or oxen. We have to pay attention to our herd, to the people who are under our influence. Our riches are not going to be there forever. Our income, our health, our lifespan is temporary. So we need to redeem the time the days are evil. When the hay is removed, the tender grass shows itself. If you've ever seen hay out in the middle of a field that's been there maybe all winter, and you take away that hay, out from under it you'll see green grass growing that can't grow further until you get the hay out of the way. And the same way with a lawn. If you mow a lawn and leave the grass there, the new grass can't come up. So you got to rake it. Well, that's the idea here. The tender new grass can't show itself unless you get the hay out of the way. Hay wouldn't stubble. The herbs of the mountains are gathered in. The lambs will provide your clothing. The goats, the price of the field. So a good farmer here who works hard and takes care of his flock is going to benefit from the productivity of his farm and his goats and his lambs. You shall have enough goat's milk for your food, for the food of your household and the nourishment of your maidservants. This is an agricultural community where you live off of the land, where you plant seasonally and take care of your goats and count on the rain. And God knows how to take care of you from your own sphere of influence in life. We don't raise goats, although it's a great thing. Goats are very instructive, and sheep are fun. Sheep are dumb, as you know, but goats are smart. Anyway, look at the vivid pictures in Proverbs of a holistic lifestyle, a well-rounded person, a person who is separated from the way the pagan world lives. All of the Proverbs is set in this rural agricultural setting of the ancient world. It's hard for us to apply this to living in a city. Now, our destiny is to live in a city. Ray Stedman brings this out in his studies on Hebrew. We are destined to live in a city. Abraham, 4,000 years ago, looked for the city that was made by God, whose builder and maker is God. Ray points out that we do not yet know how to live in a city. Cities are very convenient. Elevators and neighbors right next door, and grocery store right downstairs. And living in a city requires an enormous adjustment to your neighbors. You can't go hide from your neighbors or isolate from them. You got to live with them. But you got to give them their own Narnia space, their own territory. And respect the fact that they're probably different than you are in many ways.
There's a three-part evolution I don't fully understand between body, soul, and spirit. And in the Old Testament, it's modeled as Salem, which is the Melchizedekian, and then Jerusalem or New Salem. And then in the New Testament, New Jerusalem or like New Salem.
New Jerusalem.
So there's this sort of the idea that God is creating a heavenly city, but he's taking it from a prototype stage through different levels of refinement.
Yeah, exactly.
In essence, and then it is the New Jerusalem is transparent gold, is the way it's described.
City of gold.
It's gold that's been purified so much that you can see through it almost.
Yep, transparent.
There's great mysteries in all of this, but I think the New Jerusalem is like the spirit, and the Jerusalem is like the soul, and the Salem was like the body, or something like that. That's just my sense on it. And all three are going on simultaneously.
That's right.
From the picture of time, we have to go through this stage, and it's a sort of barbaric tribal existence, and then we go through this next stage, and it's more of a instituting government and realizing that human governance is no good, and then it's finally like giving all that up and accepting the highest governance that there is, because it's the only right and true and good governance, and being able to dwell in the peace that comes from that.
Well, let's quit. Is that all right? Now, Dave Bagner will never let me quit.
That's fine.
Is that enough? You got to leave it a little bit, I think so.